are Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, hear what's planned for this year's International Overdose Awareness Vigil in Sullivan County and why events like this are critical in the fight against the opioid crisis. Camille O'Brien, Crisis Service Coordinator in the Sullivan County Department of Community Services and International Overdose Awareness Committee member, joins us live. Plus, Michael Martelon, the new CEO of the Sullivan County Visitors Association, shares his vision for the Catskills from fresh ideas and big changes in his first 50 days to the future of tourism in the region. Food, music, dancing, and a starry summer night. It's at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance Summer Garden Party. Plus, local economic perspective from local author and economist James B. Huntington. All coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump is scheduled to meet Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House today. They'll have a small meeting, but that will be quickly followed by a larger event. Zelensky will be joined by several European leaders at the White House. Today's meetings come after Trump held a summit last Friday in Alaska with Russian President Vladimir Putin. NPR's Franco Ordonez says last week, Trump announced he had specific plans to help stop Russia's war in Ukraine.
Trump has shifted his positions after meeting with Putin. Before, Trump insisted that the next step needed to be a ceasefire. He didn't get that. And now he's actually saying that the best way to end the conflict is to go directly to a peace agreement, which is Putin's preferred position. So the European leaders want to prevent Trump from forcing more of Putin's positions on Ukraine.
And NPR's Franco Ordonez reporting. Israelis staged one of their biggest protests yesterday in nearly 2 years of war. Organizers say hundreds of thousands of people rallied to end the Gaza war and reach a hostage deal with Hamas. NPR's Daniel Estrin reports from Tel Aviv.
Protest organizers released aerial footage of masses filling downtown Tel Aviv at the end of Sunday's day of demonstrations. They said hundreds of thousands of people rallied, shutting down roads across Israel and protesting outside the homes of government ministers. Many businesses closed too. It was one of the largest street protests to take place during the Gaza war. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said calls to end the war now, before Hamas is defeated, only strengthen Hamas. Negotiations for a ceasefire broke down weeks ago. Now Qatar and Egypt are working on a new proposal. Israel is demanding the release of all of the hostages Hamas is holding. The previous proposal spoke of releasing only half the hostages for a temporary ceasefire. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Stocks open lower this morning as investors wait to hear from big retailers this week. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 70 points in early trading.
Walmart, Home Depot, and Target stores all report their quarterly earnings this week. Investors will be listening for clues about how shoppers are spending money and possible price hikes. Wholesale prices jumped more than expected last month. Retail sales rose by 0.5%. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell speaks on Friday at the annual Jackson Hole Conference of Economists and Central Bankers. The Fed's nearly finished with its long-range policy review, which it does once every 5 years. Back in 2020, the central bank said it would not raise interest rates preemptively just because of a tight job market. But after several years of inflation that's above target, the Fed's strategy could shift to underscore the importance of stable prices. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 68 points. The Nasdaq is down about 7. This is NPR. President Trump says he wants to entirely end the use of mail-in ballots and certain voting machines. Writing today online, Trump falsely claimed they're involved in voter fraud. There is no evidence of any significant voting fraud with these methods. Trump also falsely claimed that in matters of voting, all states have to do what the federal government, through the President of the United States, tells them to do. In fact, state and local jurisdictions are responsible for running elections. Rats are nuisances. They carry disease and they wreck property. Now, city officials near Boston are trying a different approach to bring down the numbers of these pests. Ari Daniel reports they're trying a method of birth control.
Rats outwit our traps, and attempts at poisoning can backfire. So the cities of Somerville and Cambridge are introducing bait that contains an anti-fertility chemical that targets female rats.
So it basically stops the pregnancy before it starts.
Sam Lipson is the senior director of environmental health in Cambridge, and he's overseeing a field trial of the chemical. The birth control doesn't lead to permanent infertility. The goal is not total eradication. Deneen Williams is a community volunteer with the trial.
I have no illusion that we can actually outsmart the rats, but if we could just reduce them, that would be good.
If it works, the cities will likely adopt the approach as part of their broader rat control strategy. For NPR News, I'm Ari Daniel.
Again on Wall Street, the Dow is now down about 40 points. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Betterment, an automated investing platform that strives to make it easy to be invested. Learn more at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. It's Monday and it's working time for James B. Huntington's local economic perspective. Good morning, James B.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, we heard a little bit about this in NPR News headlines about the Consumer Price Index and some of the economic news there. But what happened with the Consumer Price Index? What more can you tell us about it?
Well, it rose on one of the measures. The general index stayed at 2.7% per year and 0.2% monthly. But the core CPI, which it does not include food and energy costs, went up 0.3% or 3.1% year over year. So that's a little bit of a cause for concern. Looking at prices, the changes in July, the things that went up the highest in the categories they have were airline fares, 4.0%. Fuel oil, 1.8%, motor vehicle maintenance and repair, plus 1%, dairy products, plus 0.7%, used cars and trucks, plus 0.5%, and hospital services, up 0.5%. The biggest losers were gasoline, all types, down 2.2%, piped utility gas service, down 0.9%, and gasoline, and non-alcoholic beverages, rather, down 0.5%.
And what does this tell us about how the economy is going? Did it slow? Did it grow? Did it stay the same in the first half of this year? It's kind of hard to make it out, if you ask me.
Well, what we're seeing, the report that came out before this last one did, was showing that economic growth weakened a little bit in the first half of the year. It went up 3% at an annual rate in the second quarter. That's not terrible, but that's down. It was higher than what forecasters thought. Different things happened with trade and inventories caused by the latest on the tariff policies. So there's certainly a consensus among economists that we have not seen the full effects from tariffs yet.
And how are consumers now feeling this pinch of tariffs? Are we starting to see some of it? I've sensed that some folks are getting it in certain places, but it hasn't seen the full impact of it yet.
Yes. Well, a couple of days later, similar report said that companies were starting to move more tariff-related costs to consumers. Some of them have held off in the beginning here. So we have prices rising in June, especially high on items heavily exposed to tariffs. Some of those things are home furnishings, toys, and appliances. So it might be slower than we expected for the tariffs to affect us, but they are there, and as they get installed and as they roll on, there will be more and more effects, varying a lot from category to category.
And some of the results of the tariffs have been sort of mild so far. Why is that?
Well, one thing is that they were not coming in right away. It's the not that much. There's not that much history in Trump's tariffs actually being in place. They went in, they went out, they went in, and then they went out, and some of them have gone in more. So there's just not very much that's happened. We've also had some positive things that have offset the problem of the tariffs.
And what are some of those positive things that are offsetting?
Well, we're getting problems with, or we're getting good things with sales, with retail sales in general, and more money being spent in a lot of places, and a lot of things that were supposed to avoid a recession that were, or things that might have signaled or might have indicated a higher chance for recessions haven't really happened. AI has been contributing significant amount in data and in helping businesses be more profitable and otherwise. So it's all mixed, and it's something we can't forget that even though we have something bad happening in the tariffs, and almost everyone, almost every economist will agree with that, we still have other good things and other bad things going on, like the effect of immigration. The shrinking immigration is hurting money spent in other ways also. But there's more going on than just the tariffs, in other words.
A murky picture, keeping your eyes on it. Let's talk about this morning's activity. What were the stock, oil, precious metal, and other prices this morning, and how did they change?
As of early this morning, a one-week change. We have gold, $33.47, down $15. It's still not doing very much, but it's moved for the first time in about a month, actually, for the overall week result ending early Monday morning. Silver, $38.04 plus 24 cents for a ratio of silver to gold, gold to silver rather, of 88-1. Not down a lot, but silver, actually gold, looks like the better deal right now as long as that ratio is under 90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 44,946 plus 770. For a fine week, pushing on all-time highs there. NASDAQ, 21,622 plus 170, a little less proportionally, but also around all-time highs. Doing very well. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 62.87, down 76 cents. We're not seeing that at the pumps, but that may change because it was almost $3 down last week, so give it another week or two and we really should be seeing lower gas prices. Bitcoin, 115,224 for down 6,400 and some, close to where it was 2 weeks ago. British pound, 1.3546, up 84 hundredths of a cent. The dollar has been weakening a little for various reasons. The euro, 1.1683, up 29 hundredths of a cent, same general idea. And the Japanese 100 yen coin is still 68 cents, the same it's been since June. So overall, we can expect more effects from tariffs as the weeks go on. We're having concerns growing about stocks when they reach the all-time highs that they may be due for a correction, but all that money, and there's a lot of money out there right now, has to go somewhere.
All right. James B. Huntington, local author and economist, keeping an eye on everything for us. We appreciate it, and we will be back with you next week as things keep changing and moving in the economy.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, International Overdose Awareness Day is coming up, and we'll get a preview of what's planned for the vigil in Sullivan County. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
On the next Fresh Air, Bowen Yang. He's nominated for an Emmy for his performances on Saturday Night Live. He'll talk about working on the show, his obsession with pop culture, which is why he co-hosts the podcast Las Culturistas, and the contrast between his life and the lives of his parents who emigrated from China. Join us.
Listen to Fresh Air today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
In a crowded media landscape, public radio brings you something different.
Amafuri is a traditional Japanese folk song. It's about a child that is caught in the rain.
Human stories and epic tales.
The water was very cold. There were constant waves, and the wind blew for 10 days.
Help keep NPR and this station one of a kind by making your gift today. Thanks.
Make your donation at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Today, we're going to talk more about International Overdose Awareness Day and an attention that's touched so many families in Sullivan County and beyond, the ongoing opioid crisis. Each year, communities around the world come together for International Overdose Awareness Day, a time to honor lives lost, support those grieving, and raise awareness about prevention and recovery. Joining us now is Camille O'Brien, Crisis Service Coordinator for the Sullivan County Department of Community Services and a member of the International Overdose Awareness Committee. She's going to tell us about that vigil that's happening locally on August 26th and about the important role this event plays in building a healthier and more resilient community. Camille, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being here. And tell us a little bit more about International Overdose Awareness Day and why it's so important to remember this day every year.
Well, you know, we always want to remember anybody that passes, but particularly that's why there's so much education going on out there, so many lawsuits going on. The opioid epidemic affected everybody. Mm. It wasn't just certain people, and we want to remember that, honor those people, give hope to those still struggling, give support to the families that both have people lost and are struggling. And get the education out there for anybody that does need help, for them not to be afraid and to know that resources are there. And that's something that we're really focusing on this year. There's going to be a lot more resources, 31 tabling organizations, all having to do with recovery support for both those affected by substance use as well as their families. It's more tabling organizations than we've ever had at International Overdose Awareness Day. This is the fifth year in a row that we're having it in Sullivan County. Lindsay Wheat and Sullivan 180 do a great job hosting, and they invite everybody to join. We have a whole committee that puts it together every year, and we're really excited for this one. It's a bit more interactive than past years, and we're still having the candlelight vigil. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have bagpipes, the purple lights on the courthouse building. We still want it to be a beautiful honorarium. But we're also going to have time for everybody to interact with tabling. If you have pictures of loved ones lost, we're going to have a place to put pictures to really put a face on this. And there's going to be some art as well.
Oh.
Yeah. So Joshua Noah, I know he's done a few murals around Sullivan County. Mm-hmm. He's going to be doing a live interactive mural beforehand. And he's actually one of our speakers. He's going to speak about his journey through in sobriety. We don't want to say through. It's never over. It's a continuing journey. But, yeah, he's going to have a mural everybody can interact with, and then he's going to speak about his story.
And earlier you mentioned those lawsuits. I think you're alluding to some of those lawsuits against Big Pharma, holding them accountable for some of their role in the opioid crisis.
Absolutely.
And Sullivan County has really been hit hard by this opioid crisis. I think leading the state at a place where you don't want to lead the state in the number of deaths related to opioid crisis. How has this sort of gotten better in this area? And how do you see events like this contributing to longer term change?
Well, events like this really we're trying to cut down on stigma, because there's some classic views on how people get into drugs, but that's part of these lawsuits with Big Pharma. A lot of people were given medication, whether after surgery, whether it be dental surgery or knee surgery, whatever it may be. And we're finding this with all substance use. Everybody's brain chemistry is different. And sometimes, those prescriptions hit somebody's system and, their system likes it. You know, some people like alcohol more than others. Some people like cigarettes, whatever it may be. It's actually all body chemistry. Some of it is inherited, some of it learned, a mix of the two. But so something particular actually in Sullivan County that we learned as we were studying this the past couple of years, being rural, so anybody that got a prescription, once again, also like sometimes prescriptions run out. We've seen people actually pass away getting street drugs because their prescription ran out and they didn't want to get a whole prescription. So be careful. You only want to get these from your doctor. And now doctors are a lot more in tuned with the amount of prescription they're giving. So being rural, if people couldn't make it to the doctor again for another 6 weeks, they were getting bigger prescriptions. So that was something that actually has to do with transportation, but was causing bigger amounts per prescription. So not that that's all part of it, but there's these little details like that, and some of them add up in a place like Sullivan County. So as of a few years ago, we were the highest rate in New York State for opioid overdose deaths, which we no longer are. We're not that far from the top of that list, but we are getting better. I attribute that partially to the organizations that have gotten out there, partially to law enforcement really trying to crack down on where these drugs are coming from, both on the street, legitimate and illegitimate, to our doctors and providers that are being more mindful with the way they prescribe and what they prescribe and the amounts they prescribe. And overall, yeah, having had that International Overdose Awareness Day and remembering those who have passed away reminds us of where we were, where we are, and where we're going. And hopefully that continues to get better.
Do you see in your role in Sullivan County as the crisis services coordinator for Department of Community Services, do you also see that federal designation as a high intensity drug trafficking area, or HIDTA, or is it HIDTA?
HIDA.
Is that contributing to some of the improvement as well by having those resources?
Absolutely. So HIDA is – they do a lot of tracking from wherever things are coming into the country all the way around, and it's a lot of tracking of drug – well, tracking of drug trafficking. Oh, let me say that clearly. So – some counties around us had it, and before we had that designation, these crime analysis centers around the country would be tracking these drug traffickers until they got to Sullivan County, and then we didn't have the resources to be able to track that. And some things they track, it's not necessarily just people, but certain formulations of the drugs. As they process that, they can see if it matches other places, so they can see where it's coming from. Stamps on both the bags and the pills, sometimes that'll match, and they look for little things like that. But having Sullivan County a high-impact drug trafficking area designee has not only helped us to track that, but it's actually helped other areas as they're tracking it through. Because again, particularly where we are and being rural, if people don't want to take the thruway, a lot of times they'll come the back roads and they'll come through Sullivan County to avoid being detected. Mm-hmm. And now having that designation, we're able to detect them more readily. So, yeah.
So International Overdose Awareness Day is a international event, as it says in the title. Mm-hmm. And so locally, it's the fifth anniversary of the event. You mentioned how this year you have more folks participating at the event. How else do you think it's evolved over the last 5 years?
Well, it's definitely grown. It started as a smaller event. I'm not going to lie. 5 years ago, there was much more stigma in our county.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about the stigma and how that's changed.
So there was stigma more so against people that use drugs, people that died from drugs. We felt stigma when we were getting Narcan out there. And it was under this assumption that everybody that got into drugs chose to do drugs. It was completely their choice. And every single time they did it was a choice. And that's something that with the study of substance use, once somebody's addicted to something, if you're familiar with the Maslow hierarchy of needs, addiction to something actually supersedes both housing and food. So once somebody is addicted to something, it's not a choice every time. It actually becomes the only choice, and they stop thinking about other things. And that's where, as people do recover, there's stopping using whatever substance. And then there's also the behaviors, because there are behaviors that come with it for the using, but then also otherwise to be able to get those drugs and whatever that entails. So in the last 5 years, chopping out that stigma, we've seen a lot more people come forward for help. And as, again, with the opioid crisis, it's touched so many people, it's hard to find anybody that doesn't know anybody that has been touched by it. So once you put those human faces to it.
And when you say you've had more people come forward to seek help, is that how do you think that intersects with like the reduction of stigma, or that how are they seeing it okay to come to folks that they may not want to come to in the past, officials or authorities, police even, to get help?
I think a lot of stigma gets internalized. And we hear that with a lot of things, that if you hear enough people use the word junkie, you start to think, well, that's all I am. So taking away that stigma, being more careful with words. I actually talk about this whenever I do Narcan trainings with organizations, that even if you're not around anybody using drugs right now or that you know of, be careful with your words, because, you know, it happens quickly and sometimes unexpectedly, and you want that person to feel safe coming to you. But if you've used words like that, they may be more afraid. And, you know, that's where in NA and AA, the first step is admitting it. And that's a lot of internalized. And we see that with other, not just drug use, that sometimes if you hear hate towards a certain population and you are of that population, you internalize it and you're afraid to come forward. And that's where following in that same line with drug use and opioid use, if people hear that people actually care about them, they sometimes will start to care about themselves and want a better life for themselves. And we always hope for that.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Camille O'Brien, Crisis Services Coordinator for the Sullivan County Department of Community Services and a member of the International Overdose Awareness Committee. She's talking about the upcoming International Overdose Awareness Day vigil in Sullivan County. That's happening on August 26th. International Overdose Awareness Day is actually August 31st. Yes. Why holding it on the 26th?
We're trying a different day. In the past couple of years, we've done it on Thursdays. We find it's harder for people to get there on weekends. So this year, we're trying a Tuesday night. And actually, there's a big meeting across the street. I was for the Tuesday. So every month, the AA and NA organizations have their celebrations of all people celebrating, whether it's 1 year, 15 years, 20 years. There'll be a big celebration just up the street that very night. So to have everybody hopefully come from one of those big celebrations and come join us for this and show that there is hope and there is a better life if somebody will make that choice. And, a lot of people in recovery have lost people as well.
I want to ask you about the people mm-hmm. in recovery that have lost folks or people that know folks, mm-hmm. that this is a big part of that too, recognizing and honoring them as well.
Absolutely.
What have you heard from folks who have either participated in events like this or about to participate in events about the importance of having something like that and acknowledging the person and the life?
Well, it's always touching. And if anybody hasn't been there, it is touching to you want to remember them, and you don't want to just remember them for that one thing, but as a whole person. And that's where, you know, a lot of times I've heard this said in the rooms before. I myself have been, I'm in recovery. And sometimes in the rooms, people will say, I'm lucky to have this seat here because somebody else didn't make it. And we need to remember that and know that any one of us can be that person. Any one of our loved ones can be that person. And just to remember that and remember to, you know, embrace people for who they are and be there for them. This year, again, if anybody has pictures of somebody they've lost, to please bring those pictures. We're going to have a place for them. We're also going to be tying ribbons around the tree for people lost, people struggling, and people in recovery. Those ribbons, they'll be dark purple, light purple, and white, will be tied around a tree in the courthouse yard, and they'll stay there all week. So anybody passing by that can't make the event, if they're wondering what that is, it'll have things written on the ribbons. There'll be a sign describing what it is. So again, the event is only for a couple hours, but we want to extend that. And also, you know, just always have it out there. We try and always have events going on and let people know that there are resources out there. And it's great to see success stories. And again, our muralist will be speaking about his journey into recovery. So that'll be really nice for anybody that wants to hear. And we'll also be hearing from a mother that lost her son. And, you know, it's a hard journey and not everybody makes it. But we do want to remember them and remember their life and who they were and their families.
You, I mentioned your role in the county, your role on the committee for the vigil.
Oh, yeah.
But you mentioned that you yourself are in recovery. What does this mean for you personally then?
For me personally, it means a lot because, you know, sometimes people wait until they hit rock bottom to go into recovery. I wouldn't say I hit my furthest bottom, but I wasn't happy, and I knew it was affecting me. And actually, as I learned more about it, because there's a term, recovery curious. So, yeah, sometimes people are curious about it. The first step is admitting it, because a lot of times people don't know they have a problem, because I personally didn't think I had an issue because I wasn't as bad as other people. And growing up, I didn't think I was as bad as my dad had been. But as I learned more, I realized, you know, he was a 9/11 firefighter, a lot of traumas. We see that a lot with substance use, traumas, people, PTSD. You have these images, and sometimes self-medicating is the way to go. For a lot of people, until they can find those other tools, which takes time. It's not quick. And again, it's not just stopping with the substance. It's these other behaviors. It's learning other coping mechanisms. But I myself, as I was curious with it and learned more, I realized my dad had had seizures his last year before he passed, which was wet brain. As you use substances, he was a drinker. The cell wall in your brain actually starts to break down. So people talk about building tolerance, and it's more receptors build up in your brain. So anybody that, as you start to drink more or use whatever more, more receptors pop up on your brain wall. Over time, as those grow and recede, it actually breaks down the cell wall, and a person will start having seizures. And
to chronic alcohol.
Alcohol
abuse.
Or any substance, really. Mm-hmm. Any substance, really. And that's where, if anybody's ever been at programs where, whether it's in rehabs or outpatient, people usually aren't allowed to be alone in case they happen to drop into a seizure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a thing that was colloquially known as wet brain, but it actually is
Wernicke
a legitimate
Karaskov syndrome.
Yeah,
neurological disorder. I looked it up.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't know how to say that.
I don't either.
Yeah, but
It is a thing. Let's talk more about the resources available for folks at International Overdose Awareness Day, that vigil in Sullivan County on the 26th. What are some more resources for folks seeking information who might be recovery curious? What will that impact do on this night, do you think?
Well, in past years, we've had places table, but we've spent more time on the speaking and a lot of elected officials coming and making speeches. We've actually cut that out this year. which, you know, no offense to them. We love them. We love what they do. I believe all of our elected officials have been beneficial to this movement in our area. But there's only so much time in a night. There's only so much time in a ceremony. So we want that time for people to actually talk to these tabling organizations, whether it's for inpatient or outpatient, medically assisted treatment, therapies, because again, like I said earlier, sometimes there's a lot of traumas associated. People will get into either drugs or alcohol due to traumas. So there'll be therapy, all sorts of organizations, also some that are peripheral. So systems of care, we call it, is the other things that get in the way of people getting help, whether it's transportation, food insecurity, housing help, parenting classes, whatever it may be. All sorts of stuff. Anybody that's curious, please come on by. We'll have at least an hour for everybody to go around and speak to each table and get information. And
let's remind folks of the details of where and anything else they need to know.
Absolutely. August 26th, it'll be on the Monticello, the Sullivan County Courthouse lawn in Monticello, right on Broadway. And it begins at 6 p.m. If you want to come a little early, you can come a little early. It goes about 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. I'll actually be there at 4 o'clock setting up. And we love our first responders. There's going to be a fire truck that comes. Monticello is bringing their ladder truck. They're going to put a big American flag. We have a bagpipe player. He's actually one of the judges down in Mammocating, I believe. Mm-hmm. But he moonlights as a bagpiper. We'll have wonderful bagpipe music. And the tabling is from 6 to 7, 7:30-ish, right around dusk, is when we're going to start with the speakers and the ceremonies. The all the police forces are going to present the colors.
Yes.
Yes, they're going to present the colors. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. It should be a really, really nice night. And we'll have candles, too. And I will say, if you have sensitive shoes, I lost a pair of suede shoes a few years ago that I dripped wax on. But we do have the covers underneath. Just be careful.
Good tip. Yeah. Where can folks get a hold of you at the county level, at the Community Services Department?
Oh, you can reach out to Sullivan County Community Services. They'll transfer you up to me. I don't know my phone number over there. I'm out in the field a lot. But my email over there is camille.o'brien@sullivanny.gov. So CAMILLE. @sullivanny.gov.
And the folks at Sullivan 180 are also part of International Overdose Awareness Day, and more information at sullivan180.org. Camille O'Brien, Crisis Services Coordinator for the Sullivan County Department of Community Services and a member of the International Overdose Awareness Committee. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Tim. It's always great to be here.
Wear some sensible shoes.
I will.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, more about the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance summer fundraiser. This is Radio Chatsko.
Hi, I'm Lakshmi Singh.
And I'm Dwayne Brown.
We normally bring you the NPR newscast each hour, but today we're here with something different.
That's right. We're sharing some recent NPR donor comments from listeners all across the country, like William in Arizona. He donated because the truth matters. I couldn't have said it better myself, William.
Anita in Maryland says, free and fair news is important for me and those in my diverse community to thrive and understand one another.
Biora in Florida donated to support, quote, dependable, informative, brave reporting. I could go on and on.
Okay, we'll end with Joe in Kentucky, who says, I can't imagine a world without public radio.
If you can't imagine a world without public radio either, please Join the community of NPR network supporters and give to this station today.
Here's how, and thank you.
Make your donation at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Later this month, the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance is inviting the community to gather in the gardens of Ladybug Land for its annual Summer Garden Party fundraiser. It's August 30th, and guests will enjoy a farm-to-table dinner prepared by Chef Mercedes Gollop, live performances from Vanetta Hartman and Julian Giamio. I'm going to get this from you guys. all to support DVAA's mission and to nurture arts in the region. Joining us now to share more about this are Joanna Medding, Development Associate at DVAA, and board member Alessandra Lavarone. Hello.
Hi, everybody.
How are you? Hey. See?
Thanks for having us back. You guys rock.
Tell us a little bit more about the summer garden party and why it's such a big fundraiser for DVAA.
Well, as you know, we need to be doing all of our own funding. And as a board director, it's just been really incredible watching the community gather. And the DVAA gives over $100,000 a year to lots of recipients and organizations. And it's just going to be fabulous. Joanna has been essential. It is a new position for the organization, and she has just put together the most fabulous event. We are selling tickets. They're $125. We've already have, it's definitely going to sell out. So you want to click on today and get a ticket. It's a sit down dinner with live music, a DJ barn dance party. We'll be having a lot of fun at our auction. We just did a walkthrough this morning. There's also going to be a ice cream parlor. I found out. That's pretty cool, right, Joanna?
We have lots of good stuff in store. And you can get those tickets at Delaware Valley Arts Alliance /garden. And thank you for saying all those wonderful things. But it really has been a wonderful community effort. So, you know, from farmers to local makers, we've received lots of donations. And it has really been a huge community effort.
So I mentioned that this is set at Ladybug Land.
Oh, so cool.
Where is Ladybug Land? And sort of paint a picture of what folks can expect when they arrive.
It's literally like the coolest place. I just went, and it's just going to be fantastic. It's basically going to be like one of those Instagram nights. You want to be a part of it. We're doing seats that are, there's table captains, there's 10 per seat, there's an entry. I mean, it's just nuts.
Where is Ladybug Land?
Yeah. So Ladybug Land is in Cochecton Center. It is a private residence, artist residence. So it has all the wonderful things from, you know, flowers and garden and just all rustic boho chic vibes. But yeah, it's going to be beautiful.
All right. Tell me a little bit more about the food and drink. I massacred the names of the folks who are cooking. Tell me a little bit more about the dinner.
Yes.
The founder of the Casa Masa project. Mm-hmm.
So Mercedes Gollop is a chef. She's based out of Bethel, and she brings her Venezuelan heritage alive in the kitchen. So she'll be serving up tamales and gazpacho, and it'll be, just absolutely delicious. She's incredible, and she hosts workshops and all of that good thing, and yeah.
And it's a four course. We just went over it today, so mm-hmm. It's totally worth your money. And, you know, this is Alessandra from the Velvet Maple, and I want you all to bring your checkbooks. I expect to see you there. I will be doing cartwheels and tricks.
Well, tell we all will be.
Yeah. Tell us about the, auction items.
Absolutely.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about those items. Some unique items. A private plane ride over the Catskills.
Oh, what? Yes. And I'm going to find that hard to not try to get that one myself.
Totally. We have a private party at the Calicoon Theater up for grabs, which
absolutely.
Is so cool. Shout out to the Calicoon Theater. Thank you so much.
Outlier Inn has donated two nights stay and a private.
Oh my gosh, Josh, you're the best.
Just lots of very unique experiences. We're trying to not have items up for auction, rather just really experience what our area has to offer.
What's something you're really excited about besides the plane ride, Joanna?
Oh man, the plane ride really has a lot on my mind.
There's a woodlock day. That's pretty
woodlock
cool.
Woodlock spa day. We have a artist in Eldred who's going to also donate a 3-hour painting workshop. And yeah, it's all just supposed to be really intimate and not things that aren't necessarily available to the public.
Talk about how an event like this helps support the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance and local arts and artists in our region. I mean, that's what this is all about, right?
Yeah. I mean, this has just been so amazing. When they approached me to join the board of directors, I was really just starting an empty nest. My son's going to college, so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. But now with all this stuff going on, it's just become such an honor. Every single dollar that the DVA gets, either through openings or these fundraisers, literally gets given away. Nothing is kept. You know, it keeps the free programming, like the galleries and the shows, going all year round. But when they let me behind the, you know, Wizard of Oz curtain, how much money is given out is incredible. I mean, I've met so many artists who got grants this year, literary grants, dance grants, poetry grants, radio grants. And, you know, it's just phenomenal. So it takes a community, but, anything that you are excited about in the Catskills, most likely the DVA has a hand in it. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Alessandra, talk a little bit more about how it strengthens the DVAA and you know, the funds from an event like this help strengthen those ties in the community that DVAA serves.
Absolutely. And that's why they were like, oh, we really wanted a small business seat on the board. And every time there's an opening, we all stay open later. Every time somebody gets involved, I would say like 3 out of the 5 people end up purchasing a home in the area. They just fall in love. We call it, you know, they get bit by the Berg bug. It's really, I mean, well, I've been open for 13 years. I see it. Somebody comes in for a weekend like Deepwater Literary Fest, who we also donate to. And then the next year they come back in and they're like, oh, we fell in love. We bought a house.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because Dan, who's from Sullivan County Government, was here on Friday. He's the communications director. And the treasurer, Nancy Buck, did a presentation at last week's legislature about what the top tax income contributors were to the county. And everyone thinks it's tourism, and it's there. But the top one was actually building materials.
Absolutely.
Because people are building and buying, and people are, you know, they see, and I'm not relating these two directly, but
no,
as
but
you say
true.
Anecdotally, and as we see some of the data,
we
that,
have
you
donors
know, people
for the
be
alcohol
here.
And food, for example, like La Cigone and Berryville Oasis. I mean, and these are people that are building out these spaces out of pocket. The French restaurant now in Narrowsburg, I was like, it's so big. Like, who's going to come here? And somehow it's packed every weekend. And Damien has been so wonderful donating food.
The arts are definitely a part of that attraction to the area.
That's why they donate food and give back to us. Yeah. I mean, why would these restaurants, you know, give, you know, they must see it. They, to answer your question, they see it across business for them too, because people do go and eat after a show, you know, or they do walk in and go shopping. So it's just fantastic, but it's so exciting. The shows have their Tanner. What is Tanner's?
Simon.
Tanner Simon. And what's his role at the DVA now?
He's the gallery director.
Oh, yeah. He has really stepped it up. Honestly, I buy art, and the last couple of shows have been, I mean, it's just like a level up. So we want you to make it to the dinner party. You can, if you can't make it, you can also just log on, become a member. It's $55 a year.
Yeah, it starts at 50. Indeed.
It starts at 50, and you will get everything is free. So there is a way that you can get involved, and you can come to these shows, and you know, you can also just buy art, which is awesome.
Support the arts, support the artists in the area. One more time about where and when the event's taking place.
So August 30th, it'll start at 4 p.m. with a nice cocktail hour. And it's at the Private Artists Residence in Cochecton Center. It's very nearby Hennings, if that kind of gives
it's
you an
idea. Hennings used to be, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not this Saturday, next Saturday, people. Let's go.
Yes, Labor Day weekend.
All right. That is Alessandra Laverone and Joanna Metting from Delaware Valley Arts Alliance talking to us about their summer garden party.
Thank
enthusiastically.
You so much. But we're so thankful to you, too. Thanks for having us, really.
Yeah, we absolutely adore this partnership. So thank you.
I love the chat skill. That's cute. You got to make a hat out of it.
I'm not even paying them. There's more information at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. Thank you guys so much.
See you there. Thanks.
We'll take a break and we'll have more radio chat skill after this.
Duke Devlin came to Bethel, New York for the Woodstock Music and Arts Fair in 1969, and he never left.
Hi, my name is Duke Devlin. We're sitting right here at the corner of the most famous hayfield in the world, I'd probably say, next to the monument here at Bethel Woods, the site of the Woodstock Music and Arts Fair.
He stayed in the community and spent decades at the site telling the Woodstock story. And now you can hear it from Duke for yourself on the Woodstock Lost and Found podcast at WJFFradio.org. Only from Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Thousands of people across the country have come together to launch the Pollinator Pathway, a grassroots movement focused on protecting and restoring habitats for bees, birds, butterflies, and moths, and other pollinating insects. Here in the Upper Delaware River Valley, many are joining the call. Radio Catskills' Kimberly Izar spoke to education and volunteer coordinator Rachel Morrow from the Delaware Highlands Conservancy about all things pollinators and an upcoming event on August 23rd called Pollinator Pathway, Be On It. Get it?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kim.
Of course. So why don't we start with just some introductions? Tell me a little bit more about what you do at the Delaware Highlands Conservancy.
Yeah, so my role as the education and volunteer coordinator, so the first part, education, I create and put out education events, and I also bring in speakers that are professionals on that topic to help educate not only landowners, which is our main focus, but also general public, so families, kids, middle school age, high school age. With this program in particular, it's more so appropriate for high school to adult age people.
And what part of the region does the Conservancy serve exactly?
Our region, we focus in four counties, two in New York, two in Pennsylvania. The two in New York are Delaware and Sullivan, and then the two in Pennsylvania are Pike and Wayne. In those four counties, and a couple outliers, but mostly those four counties, we have helped conserve over 19,000 acres of land.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I know you have an upcoming event on the 23rd, the Pollinator Pathway Be On It event. Tell me a little bit more about what this event will look like.
Yeah, so this event, pretty neat. One of our board members, Louise Washer, will be leading it. She is also a member of the executive board of the Pollinator Pathway, which you mentioned in the introduction. She helped found it in 2017, and it's now a network of over 350 communities across 19 states and Canada. She serves as a facilitator of the Pollinator Pathway Advocacy and Pesticide Committee, which has helped work to pass the Bees and Bird Protection Act in New York in 2023. So she's very well versed in all things pollinators. So she'll be coming to talk at the reserve. The first portion will be a lecture. She'll be talking about the decline and why that's happening, or some reasons as to why. And then she'll be talking about different species of bees and butterflies. And after we have this discussion of how we can help them and why things are happening, we're going to go out onto our reserve, the Vanscott Nature Reserve. And we have a meadow there with a wealth of milkweed. And we're going to be going out into the meadow with her, looking for different instars of caterpillars for the monarch butterfly.
Oh, that's going to be such a fun day.
Yes.
I think it might be fun to give folks a little bit of a sneak peek as to what exactly is a pollinator and why are they so important to our ecosystems in this region?
Yeah, so pollinators in general are, well, actually, it's really anything that helps pollinate flowers and plants. It's a big component to agriculture. So helping not only wildflowers and things thrive and keep alive, but in agriculture, we need those plants to be pollinated as well. So it's a huge impact on our food industry. And pollinators can range from birds or from bees to butterflies, but it ranges out to other things that people don't think about, like birds. They're a great pollinator, and other insects are pollinators as well. Beetles and grasshoppers, anything that has anything to do with flowers and plants can be considered a pollinator, whether they spread through contact with pollen to jumping from plant to plant, or seed dispersal, right? So birds eat these plants and they disperse the seeds around when they excrete it after they've eaten it. So there's a wide range of pollinators that people don't think about, but we focus mainly on butterflies and bees because they are such great pollinators.
And I am just thinking about, you know, these pollinators play such a big role in preserving and allowing our farmlands and our forests and waterways to thrive. what happens when pollinators are a threat? Like, what happens to our ecosystems?
Yeah, so pollinators are what we would consider a keystone species. So keystone species is when a certain animal, when it gets taken out of the food web, there's a huge collapse within the food web. There are some smaller animals that if they were to go extinct, like it might cause a little bit of a shift, but not like a huge thing that we would notice. But pollinators, definitely, if they start to diminish or we lose a lot of them, we're going to see less success in our flowers, in our agricultural crops. And agricultural crops going down means less yield of food for not only us, but animals that we feed. Like, we make a whole bunch of grains and corns and things like that for our livestock. And if we can't get that for our livestock, then the whole meat industry could go down. So it's a whole tumbling blocks of, if we lose that base of the food web or the food chain, whatever you want to call it, which is our plants that our pollinators help spread, then you're going to see a lot of dominoes fall in sequence because of the loss of the base.
Yeah, I mean, it's this big ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
So the event on Saturday, on August 23rd, this is going to be at the Van Scott Nature Reserve. Can you tell me a little bit more about why you decided to have this event here and what people can expect to see?
Yeah, so the Van Scott Nature Reserve, one of the reasons it's at here is because it's where our main office is at. In 2020, we were fortunate enough to be donated this property by the Van Scott family. It has multiple different types of habitats. There's two ponds on the property. There's some woodlot. But then there's a whole bunch of meadow, rolling hills and meadow. And in that meadow is a bunch of milkweed. And the milkweed, plus all of the other great pollinating plant species that we have, is a great space to see pollinators and to find specifically monarchs there on the milkweed, since the monarch caterpillar depends on the milkweed plant. So we can go out and actually physically look for them at this time of the year.
And how can folks register for the event?
You can go register by going on to our website at DelawareHighlands.org. And then you go to the events page and just scroll down to August 23rd or in the August section, and you should see the Pollinator Pathways be on it. Just click on that. It's a simple registration, pretty straightforward from there.
Anything else, Rachel, that maybe we haven't talked about for the upcoming event, or anything, all things pollinators, that you want to lift up?
The only thing I will say, if you do plan on coming, make sure that you're ready for walking on a little bit of hills, because our reserve definitely isn't flat. So make sure you have some water with you and some sneakers on your feet, and you should be good to go.
Oh, yes, that is very good advice.
Yes.
Make sure to come prepared with some water to keep you hydrated, because you never know. I mean, it's the summertime, so, and it's been hot the last few days.
Yes.
That's great. I've been chatting with Rachel Morrow, Education and Volunteer Coordinator from the Delaware Highlands Conservancy. Rachel, thank you so, so much for joining us today, and I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic event.
Yeah. Thank you.
And thanks to Kimberly Izar and Farm and Country for that report. Well, note that we'll have an interview with the new CEO of the Sullivan County Chamber of Commerce tomorrow during Radio Chatskill. That's all for this edition of the show. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Chatskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
Writer Alexis Okeowo says Alabama, where she grew up, shows the best and worst of the American experiment, its blessings and disasters.
the Native Americans who managed to stay, immigrants like my parents from Nigeria. Those people and their visions of what Alabama could be is what has pushed the state forward.
I'm Amory Sievertson. What can we all learn from Alabama? That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
On Point coming up next. It's WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Well, today's temperatures cooler than the weekend. A high of 73 today, sunny skies, less humid, and looks like less humid and sunny for a long stretch of the week. A few clouds tonight, low 52. Tomorrow, sunshine and clouds mixed, high 71. Wednesday's high, only about 65. It's 11 o'clock.